Hey, thanks for always tuning in and listening to the Aftermarket's original and premier podcast. Carm Capriotto right here, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy, delivering you the freshest, relevant, and recent aftermarket bits from the digital airwaves of the world, especially North America. Hey, we reach you wherever you are. I'm with Doug Rills of AutoStream Car Care Centers. Doug, along with his partner Rick Levitin, have been around the service business for over 25 years, and they've built their reputation by offering best-in-class service to their customers. Now he joins me and answers his hand-picked questions on our format that I call 20 Questions in 30 Minutes. This episode highlights a side of Doug you've most likely never known before. We had a blast, a real blast in this interview. Hey, now before we jump into 20 questions in 30 with Doug Grills, let me thank Napa Gold Certified for their continued support. You know, Remarkable Results Radio, we're proud to partner with Napa Auto Care and the 2021 Napa Expo that's coming to Las Vegas February 1st through the 4th, 2021. Join members of the Napa family and find out the latest news and most up-to-date industry information. Mark your calendar, April 6th through the 9th, and then contact your Napa store for all the details and enrollment information. See you in Las Vegas. If you've ever gotten an idea for a show topic or a show tour, or you've got a person you'd like to see interviewed, please drop me a line. I love to hear from you. Carm, C-A-R-M, at remarkableresults.biz.
The number of times when you go against intuition and you end up thinking back on it and you say, man, you know, I had a feeling this wasn't the right decision or this wasn't the right path.
Hey, more with Doug Grills in a minute. Are you watching the new show, AftermarketWeekly.com? Well, it's a live show every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time. You watch it live on the website or on social media. Now, if you can't watch when we air live, don't worry. Please, just don't worry. Every episode's archived on the website at AftermarketWeekly.com. You can binge them there. And besides great, insightful, short topics and a new co-host each and every week, you get a live shop tour. Hey, I'm grateful that you tell others about the show and how to get the podcast on their smartphone. So important to do. Now, you're doing your part to help people listen and to help spread the good word and insights that we provide four times each week. And I thank you. Find the key talking points with Doug Grills at remarkableresults.biz/E589. Hey, a warm welcome to Doug Grills. Hi, Doug.
Carm, how are you?
I'm great, man. Auto Stream Car Care Centers all across Maryland. How many shops do you have now?
We have 6 locations.
You just don't know how to slow down, do you?
We keep going, yeah. We're still looking for more, too.
Wow. See, you're one of those, you know, examples that we talk about in our industry about succession planning and the, you know, that the group that wants to grow and can grow. So glad to have you here. You're partners with Rick Levitin, right?
Yes. Yep. Rick is my business partner, and he handles a lot of the, you know, looking for the new sites and handling real estate matters, and I'm more focused on the operations side.
How's business?
Business is good, actually. We, you know, it's been a surprising year, frankly. We had some really, really difficult times in sort of the worst parts of the pandemic, and our business was off significantly. But the summer months, starting in June and into July and August, really rebounded nicely. And I think part of that is because people are out on the road, maybe taking road trips. Being in the car has become the socially distanced alternative, acceptable way of mode of transportation. We've seen some good things in the last few months. We're pleasantly surprised by that. So things are good.
Well, good for you. I'm glad to hear that. Well, Doug is here because we're going to do that really cool, neat new format that I call 20 Questions in 30 Minutes. And I think everyone knows how it works. I send Doug 70 questions and he picks 20 that he feels comfortable to answer. Some of those I sent out are pretty tough, but I think you selected some great ones. Let's jump in right away. Question number one, and I made this number one because I'm curious myself. One thing you've done that no one knows, Doug?
So a lot of people know that I'm a huge music fan.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, let's stop for a moment and say, if you follow this man on Facebook, when concerts were the rule, you probably attended one a week, I think.
My wife and I typically will go to, I would say, 12 to 15 a year. So in the summertime, you're right. It is pretty much every week. But anyway, so I'm a huge music fan. When I was younger, I studied music when I was younger, and I actually was in a band. And when I started, I was a drummer and a vocalist. And then that, so I'm talking about in like junior high school, and then into high school, I kind of sort of gave up the drums, even though I still played, but gave up the drums in the band setting and became, I was the lead vocalist for a band. And we used to go and play dances and bars and parties and you name it. But, and I did that actually all the way into the early years of my college educate. So I was doing it for a good, you know, 6 or 7 years fronting a band. We were a cover band.
What was your favorite artist to cover?
We did a lot of, you know, Led Zeppelin, Jethro Tull. You know, we had different, through different incarnations, we played different stuff. But classic rock, I guess, would be the best way to describe what we played.
Here's a side note about music. When we were growing up in the thick of it, I mean, music was, I think, any young person's, it was a centerpiece of their life. And yet we were busy doing things and trying to get ahead. And, you know, and there was so much music choice out there. And I appreciate the music more today, Doug. I don't know about you, but more today than ever.
I love music and I love live music. And that's the concert thing because, you know, I mean, obviously I listen to recorded music all the time, but there's something about being able to experience a live show and watch people doing their craft and creating, you know, in a live setting that just, you can't replicate. You can't, I mean, there's no price that you can really put on that. And when you see some of these guys, I mean, you see some of these guys still rocking. I mean, I know that they never envisioned that they would still be doing this. Mick Jagger, you know, my wife and I saw the Rolling Stones last summer. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and these guys, I mean, they're in great shape. They're still playing, I mean, doing great shows. And it's awesome to watch these guys into their 70s still going strong.
I was going to ask you, before you brought it up, have you seen the Stones? And I know the answer would have been yes. I saw the Stones on a tour here through Buffalo, I think it was about 3 years ago, some kind of anniversary that we may have gotten tickets from our kids. What a phenomenal, I mean, I'm thinking, these guys are a little older than me, and I'm thinking, they're jumping up and down on the stage, they're sweating up a storm, they're loving what they're doing, and the crowd, I mean, they had the crowd in the palm of their hands.
Here's my funny Rolling Stones live line is, I first saw the Rolling Stones in 1982 in the New Orleans Superdome, and the funny thing about that, Carm, is they were old then. They were big in the 60s and 70s, you know, in 1982, they were sort of considered old at that time. And to think that that was almost 40 years ago, it's crazy.
Well, what I'm loving today is to see some documentaries on either the groups themselves, the, you know, an individual player in the group, or on how they made the album.
When I watch documentaries or I read different, you know, music publications, I love reading about the process of how they create music, how they write songs. And then the other thing that I love is the dynamics of the band. You know, something that I have some familiarity with, a little bit of insight, having been in bands for years, but to see the dynamic of the band and how they accomplish what they're doing. And it's I love all of it. I can't get enough of it. And I can't wait till we get back to it.
This was an interesting departure down a rabbit hole about music and the first question. And I don't know why, but I'm glad that was number one. That was fun. And what do you do for fun? I bet you what you do for fun is the second question is go to concerts.
Well, going to concerts is definitely one of them. And we've obviously this year has been, you know, just an unprecedented year. So I haven't been to a concert since September of 19. So that's a long time. So
you know what I call it? Being in dry dock.
Yeah, we are. It's just a different reality, a different environment. And I feel for these performers because that's how they make their living now. They don't make their living as much selling recorded music. They do it playing live shows. So we'll hopefully be back to that soon. But the other things I like to do, I do like to play tennis. I play tennis a couple times a week typically. This summer with this pandemic, I play golf. More guys playing golf this summer than I can ever remember, which I think is kind of a funny thing. So I played golf a couple times this year. You know, obviously I spend time with my wife and my family whenever I get a chance to kind of relax and, you know, detach from work. And I do spend a lot of time, I exercise and work out every day. That's a big thing for me. So those are kind of my interests. Yeah, the things that I do when I'm not working.
Pay attention, folks, about that exercise thing. Thanks for Doug. Question three, the most significant trend you're keeping an eye on.
We'll talk maybe perhaps at some point about technologies. I'm looking at, you know, ADAS, right? Advanced driver assistance systems and how that's impacting our business. And obviously there's so much to be determined yet in terms of all those systems and how they're going to impact our business and who's going to be able to handle the calibration of these systems and things like that. And, you know, whether we do that internally or we farm that out to somebody. So that's a big trend that I think is impacting our business. The other one too, that you and I have talked about in the past is there continues to be a lot of industry consolidation. There's consolidators out there looking to buy small regional chains. And so they're having an impact on the landscape. There's always things that are changing and dynamic that you feel like you need to keep your finger on the pulse of. And that's part of the challenge of being engaged in the business.
If you're paying attention.
If you're paying attention, or at least trying to.
And get that intuition going, that paying attention thing going, and ask yourself the questions. Do you think I know enough about ADAS? Do you think I know enough about hybrids? Do you think I know enough about EVs? I'll stop there. Do you think I know enough about succeeding my business? Do you think? And so I pay attention so much that every time I find some really interesting, oh my God, I got to interview that guy, or we got to do a topic on that, or we got to do a panel discussion on that. And just to remind the group, the team, the fans that are listening, you've got something we haven't covered here yet, and I know there's probably hundreds. Please let me know. We'll cover it.
Right. Sure. Absolutely. And you're right. There's just a myriad of topics and changes and advancements and different technologies and things coming all the time. So you do have to do your best to stay apprised.
Never be bored in this business. Question four, what skills do you delegate, Doug, because you're not good at them?
I think that one of the things that you try to do, especially as your business evolves, is try to figure out what you like to do and what you're good at. When you're starting off and when you're younger, you're by design, you have to do it all, right? You're wearing all the hats, and you know whether you're good at it or like it doesn't really matter. You have to do it. One of the things that I'm really spending a lot more time on now is really sort of divvying up the workload and letting people who are better at certain things than I am take over. In a lot of very successful organizations, there's a relationship that gets set up between sort of the visionary of the business and what they call the integrator of the business, the taskmaster of the business. It took me a while to really sort of realize it or acknowledge it, that I am the visionary of the business, the guy that's looking around the bend, trying to figure out what are our next moves, what are our next steps. And I've been blessed to be able to be partnered with two fantastic high-level integrators. One was my business partner, Rick Levitan, and the next was David Asquith, our director of operations. So the day-to-day, a lot of the day-to-day tasks, the things that come up, the checking of the boxes, that's not my forte. I can do it. I've done it forever, but it's not something that I enjoy, nor am I the best at. And there are guys like Rick and David that can just take lists of things to do and just check them off and make things happen. So sort of freeing yourself of that and releasing that, and releasing is a great word because you've got to let go and let other people do the things. And then the best and greatest thing, Carm, is that you discover that the end result that you get is probably better, I would bet in 90% of the time, better than anything I would have done on my own. That's the most fulfilling part of the whole deal.
I love the word releasing. I'm ready to delegate more. I am right now. If I had my wherewithal, tomorrow I'd be delegating a ton of the stuff that to me is routine. My creativity is one thing. The routine to get what I do in four shows a week is something else. There's some levers to pull. I'm ready not to pull any levers, you know? Thanks for that motivation. I think as so many people are listening and says, well, Doug, he's got a big place, six locations, lots of people. He could delegate all he wants. How does a small shop, you know, three bays, two, three technicians do more delegating?
Well, I think, again, as we just talked about, you have to envision an organization where you've got people doing the right job and the job that they're best suited for. And so whether you're a six location operation or a single store location, it doesn't really matter. And then the other thing too that we hear about again and again and again is, you know, are you working in the business or are you working on the business? You know, that's a very aspirational goal for somebody who's just started a new operation. But I think it's something that we should always be focused on trying to accomplish so that you can step back and let other people be responsible for these different areas of your business and allow them to really blossom and drive your business forward. And you'll get a better, more satisfying, fulfilling result. So at any level, you can take that on and try to identify, where do I really let people run?
Thanks, Doug. I wrote down three words. All are generalists, meaning if I got a small group, we're all doing general things. We're all doing the same thing. And to your point, even the smaller place, there's got to be someone who'd be really cream to the top to do something. And so no matter if we all look like we're generalists and that's how the business runs, let's start carving out some specialties amongst us and slowly learn how to take one of those great skills up to a new level. And presto magic, you may have delegation going on.
You bet. That's a natural outcome of it. There's everybody out there is better at something than the guy standing next to him. And that goes for a lot of different areas. So yeah, build on that and make it row.
Thanks for taking some extra time on that. I'm so into the how lately. You know, we talk about this high level stuff, but you know, how do you really do it? You know? Hey, Carm here. And coming up, Doug Grills shares his special strategy to build a strong reputation. Hey, it's Carm here. Today, I have a special message for Napa Auto Care Centers who are looking to take the next step in growing their business and partnership. Now, if you're ready to strive and take it to the next level, Napa invites you to consider Gold Certification. Gold Certification is a premier tier of Napa Auto Care that recognizes repair shops with a higher level of participation in the Auto Care program. The program was built by Auto Care Centers for Auto Care Centers to provide a consistent consumer experience, maximize technology leverage, and reward Napa's most committed partners. When consumers visit a Gold Certified Auto Care Center, whether it's a small facility in a rural community or a multi-bay shop in a large metropolitan area, they can expect a first-class service repair experience. This includes a well-trained staff using today's technology and quality Napa parts in a comfortable, up-to-date facility. Customers at gold-certified shops will also enjoy an extended parts and labor warranty, valuable saving opportunities, along with access to credit to pay for needed repairs, and a whole lot more. Here's what you need to qualify for the program. First, you need to be an active auto care partner for at least 12 months and have a steady business presence in your market for at least 2 years. Then to become gold certified, it's necessary to meet specific requirements, chosen because they create the most consistent consumer experience and proven to generate the most significant results for auto care centers across the country. Some of these include using digital vehicle inspection, having at least one ASE Master Certified Technician, a co-branded exterior, and offer consumer financing through Napa Easy Pay. You must also be an active member of a business development group. Once your shop achieves gold certification, you'll receive a number of benefits, including priority placement on Napa's shop locator pages, an allowance for marketing funds, 3636 peace of mind and local labor coverage, access to auto tech training, Napa Trax shop management system, smart sign digital menu board, and more. Talk with your servicing Napa store to find out everything you need to know about becoming a gold certified shop. Number five, how does one start to build a strong business culture? Now that's a heavy, heavy thing.
That is a heavy thing. And it's an important one too. And I believe that strong business culture starts with values. What are your business values? What are the things that matter to you that you want to see reflected in your organization? And by establishing those values early and making sure that they're communicated clearly and often is the start of a great business culture. So, you know, in our organization, you know, we value our number one priority is excellence, and a passion for having a passion for excellence is really the way we define that value. You know, those two things, being the very best and having passion for your work, is something that we demand and we expect from every employee. And having concern for others, our second value, having concern for others, and we call it C3. So that's customers, coworkers, community. We've got to have great value around that. And then our third, we only have three core values, and the third is perseverance. Perseverance, which means that no matter what comes your way, and we're going to talk a little bit because one of the questions is obstacles. No matter what comes your way, you've got to continue to forge ahead with your vision and try to, you know, accomplish your goals and objectives.
Thanks for that. We had a Town Hall Academy just a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the word of the day and get a whiteboard. And as you're having your daily toolbox meetings, you ask someone to bring in the word of the day and write them all down. Within about 3 weeks, you'll have 20 some words, and in them is the value statement. The team starts telling you, you know, perseverance, quality, ethics, honesty. You start seeing and hearing all of that. And it goes back to, you know, what is the culture of the business, mission, vision, values. And I so firmly agree with you that the values is the key. How do we find them? Let your people help you, because they're there for a reason. Find out what it's for and find out what they're doing for your customer. When you start hearing those values about team and customer and even place, you know, the family, you'll discover it. Thanks for that. And as a listener, don't discount these words. These are powerful, powerful words from a very successful shop owner. However, we're having a dialogue about it. And so if any of the words that Doug and I are saying together motivate you to make that first and important move on building your business culture, buy us a cup of coffee. Question number 6, Doug, do you have a strong intuition? And if you do you listen to it?
I do have a strong intuition, and I do listen to it. I will tell you that by nature, I'm a very analytical person. I'm not a gut guy per se, but what I find is that very often when I get done with the analysis, whatever gut feeling I had at the outset is typically, you know, right on target. I'm the kind of person where I will get intuition and I do follow it. I like doing the analysis. I'm not the guy that just makes the call, but I do find very often it's right. And I can't tell you the number of times when you go against intuition and you end up thinking back on it and you say, man, you know, I had a feeling this wasn't the right decision or this wasn't the right path. And you know, sometimes you're surprised. Sometimes you let things play out. And you can be surprised, but very often your intuition is at the outset is right.
So here comes your intuition. Boom. And then you go prove it because you're analytical. You prove it. If the prove it says, no, we shouldn't do it, do you go back and revisit your intuition?
I will, yeah. I mean, if there's very strong evidence to suggest that what I was feeling or thinking at the beginning is, you know, whatever I felt at the beginning, maybe I didn't have enough information. Maybe I didn't have all the facts of the situation. Maybe through that analytical process, I became aware of some things that made the picture clearer in some sense. And so there's a reason for why the intuition may have been off. But yeah, if additional evidence is out there and I make a judgment like, hey, you know what, maybe my gut on this thing at the beginning wasn't right, that can definitely happen. There's reasons for it. But I do find if you have 80 to 90% of the facts that you need to make a decision, your gut's usually going to lead you in the right direction.
Thanks for that. I think I know the answer to this next question. Number 7, do you still have the fire you had when you first started?
I absolutely do, Carm. Let me tell you, man, that's one thing I can tell you with 100% certainty. You know what's funny? I have worked harder, I would say, in the last 5 years and with greater passion than I have at any time in my career. There was a point in time where I really wanted to really double down and intensify my focus on the business and what we were doing day to day and making sure that I was connecting with everybody in the organization and finding out what, you know, what we were doing, what drives them, what motivates them, and try to really take our organization to the next level. And so making that commitment and working together with David, our director of operations, I mean, we've spent more time and more energy over the last 4 or 5 years doubling down and really, you know, doing our very best, and the results have shown. I mean, it's been exciting and great to watch. So yeah, I've lost no passion at all, and I'm just as fired up today. And I maybe to David's detriment, I tell him, I say, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I love what I'm doing. I'm not going anywhere. So
my takeaway from listening to you was learn how to fall in love again with fill in the blank.
Yes, and you know, and love what you're doing. You know, I mean, the thing is, I remember very early on when I was, you know, when I was young, I always thought like, you know, everybody would love to do, they want to do what they love, right? But when you think about it, when you're young, it's hard to really know. I mean, I talked about I loved music, right? But that wasn't going to be a long-term option for me. So I would want to do what I love. And for those people that are talented and gifted enough to be able to pursue that, man, fantastic. But the most important key to me is loving what you do. And so whatever it is you're doing and whatever it is you've chosen as your path, embrace it, love it, and you know, do amazing things with it. And that's really the key, I think, to success and happiness.
Thanks, man. Now, we learn from our mistakes. What was one of your biggest?
I would say my single biggest mistake was there was a long period of time in my career when I was running this business where I didn't accept enough personal responsibility for individual performance on the team. And I had a tendency for a long time to put blame on people that were not performing the way they should have been or could have been. And so I would just sort of write it off and say, you know, this guy's not getting it done. He doesn't have the skills. He can't bring the passion, whatever. And so it took me a long time, honestly, to kind of realize, you know what? I think what I need to do is look in the mirror and recognize that I'm not sure I've done everything I can do. Am I providing the training? Am I providing the skills? Am I providing the support? Am I doing everything that I can do to make sure that this person has been given the best possible chance to succeed and win? And so that flipped that whole thing on its head. I literally stopped writing people off and taking personal responsibility for their inability to get where they wanted to go. And then when I did that and tried to sort of push that down throughout the organization, David was there when that was happening. You know, I think we really, really started to see a huge shift, and we started to really get much, much better results and greater success and better happiness and, you know, happier employees and a more energized workforce. I mean, there was just so many great positive things that came out of that, but it really started from that change for me. Like, hey, you've got to accept personal responsibility for the performance of your team. And if you just keep blaming them and looking to hire the next guy, you're wasting a lot of time and spinning your wheels for a while before you change things.
So, Carm, why did you hire that person? What made you want to bring that person in the organization? What did you believe about them? It's only been 6 months and now you've written them off. Why?
It's so true. Like, you think about somebody, I've heard people say, and I used to maybe think this, that, oh, you know, the guy's going to give you his best shot in 30 days. You know, like, you should know in a month. Like, how is that possible? And what have you done to help that person and support them and guide them and offer them training and assistance to make sure that you've told them exactly how to do their job, how to execute their job?
Wow, great. I love where this is going. Question 9, how do you manage work-life harmony?
First off, I love work-life harmony versus work-life balance, because work-life harmony, and I've been saying that for a few years now, balance kind of implies exactly. Balance implies this, you know, equal thing, and it's not equal, especially for entrepreneurs. But the harmony thing is where you have good, you know, cohesive and coexisting, you know, work-life balance or work-life, personal life and work-life harmony. And you're spending time with your family and you're spending time on your health and you're doing the things that you need to do to unwind when you're not at work. But you're loving your work and you're passionate about it. And obviously, when we talk about passion and excitement, spending a lot of time at work may be a very positive thing for you and for your family and for your, you know, for the life that you provide. To me, have discipline around the things that you want to do outside of work. That's the number one message I would convey. You have to have great discipline. So I work out. If you want to work out every day, which I do, that requires great discipline. For me, I'm one of those guys, I get up at the crack of dawn. I'm up at 5:30 and I'm working out. I do that every day. Maybe somebody else wants to do it after work. You can't slack off on that. There's times when I think people think going off and doing the things that you enjoy, that there's, you know, that there's something about that that's not disciplined. And frankly, it's just the opposite. There's something about that that's very disciplined, carving out that time and making sure you do it.
There is nothing like a recharge. There is nothing like a change of environment. There is nothing like cocktails or dinner with friends or family. There's nothing like holding a grandchild. That lends itself over to that harmony thing. I've never known people in this industry that didn't work their butts off. The business was them. They were the business. Comes a time, like you say, to discipline and figure out that there's a life going on around you, and you need to actually get in that whirlwind and not be the center of it.
Yeah. And it's very easy to get sucked into work. And it happens to me all the time. You know, devices, right? You look at your phone. How many times you go to look at your phone for something totally unrelated? Like, you're going to look for, you know, something on your calendar, and all of a sudden you see that notification for your email. And the next thing you know, you're digging into email and you're 30 minutes down the line. I mean, we all do it. So you really do have to be disciplined and sort of block out the noise and make sure that you do whatever it was you were checking when you first went under your phone. Do that.
That squirrel sees a nut, there's a nut, there's a nut. Man, you just described me, man.
I do it all the time, Carm. Me too.
I thought it was only me. No, I know that's not true. But yeah, and every once in a while I have to say, I have to say this to myself, Doug, says, why did you go there? You just came to verify somebody's email, and that was 8-9 minutes ago.
Yeah, or you get done, and then you have to remember what it was you were really doing when you first picked up the phone. Like, what the heck was I doing?
I have to actually stop, close my eyes, rub my hands, and say, what was I actually doing just about 5 minutes ago? It's like, if you can't remember what you had for lunch, you need a nap. I think I know the answer to this again, because you've been so forthcoming. What drives you, Doug?
We're trying to create a great company. From the very beginning, you know, it's like we're multi-shop operators and people have to decide whether that's, you know, the right thing for them. And it's right for some and it's not right for others. But for us, we always had that as a goal. And we wanted to build a great company, a company that people love to work for, that customers love doing business with, that we could, you know, realize our dreams and the dreams of our people and our employees. And so that remains the goal. And I talk to our people all the time. I have a goal poster, the things that I've wanted to achieve throughout my life, which has changed over the last 20 years. And we require all of our people to have a goal poster. What are you in this for? What do you want? What are the things you're trying to accomplish? And then what I always communicate to people today is my goal poster today is helping you accomplish the things on your goal poster. That's one of my goals. So that's what it's about for us. It's just creating a great company with a great reputation and being somebody that an employer of choice, being somebody that people want to work for and fulfilling dreams.
I have so enjoyed this, and we still have a bunch of questions to go, but I just want to tell my listener this. You signed on to listen to 20 questions in 30 minutes, and we're already at 30 minutes. So it's been way too good. So I'm thrilled that this is going to go long, and I hope you, my listener, appreciates this. I think, hopefully, Doug appreciates it. You appreciate this. Question 11, how are you finding good techs?
We're finding good techs through referrals in a lot of cases, to be honest with you. And that's when you talk about being an employer of choice, one of the things that we're finding is whether it's, you know, service advisors or managers or technicians, we're getting a lot of referrals internally. We know people that are in the business and know others that are in the business. And that's another one of those dreams that you have when you start, that you become a place where people want to work for you and they start telling their friends and other people, they're like, you've got to get in on this thing. It's great. And so I would say that for the last year or two, that's probably been the best source of finding new employees is through referrals internally.
Thanks for that. Question 12, how's the business changed in the last 3 years?
Well, I alluded to it a little bit before, but it's changed dramatically for us. And it started with this, you know, this refocus that I undertook maybe 3, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. But one of the other big changes that I wanted to mention is that I read an article in Ratchet and Wrench. There was a guy in there named Greg Bunch, who I know you know. And, you know, he owned a 5-shop chain in Colorado Springs. And he wanted to start a group for multi-shop operators. And I reached out to him just by reading this article. Like I called up his main location and said, hey, I want to meet you and I want to be a part of this group. And then we were meeting at the inaugural Ratchet and Wrench conference that September. We said, hey, let's link up there and we'll get to know each other. And we did. And then he started Transformers Institute that fall and we met his first group. I was there, you know, the inaugural meeting in January of 2017. So then I met Brian Sump and I met, you know, obviously I met Dwayne Myers, but I'd met him at Ratchet and Wrench. And I mean, just so many amazing operators, guys that I've come to be great friends with and have been blessed with the opportunity to spend time with these guys over the last, you know, we're completing our fourth year. It's just been an amazing blessing and it has been transforming. It's been a transformational process for us. We've learned new things about, you know, handling our business and financial metrics and the different, you know, selling techniques and phone answering skills and all the different things that we're doing. So that's the biggest transformation we've made in the last 3 years. And it came through me reading a chance article in Ratchet and Wrench. It's just funny the way things work out.
It's so good to hear that the power of networking And like you said, you read an article, you were paying attention to what it was saying, and you said, hey, what's the possibilities here? Wouldn't hurt if I talked to this guy. And presto, you're better off for it. Greg's better off. Dwayne's better off. Brian, everyone. You know, God, I know so many of you guys so well, and I'm happy for your success. Question 13, Doug, a special strategy to build a good reputation, strong reputation.
Well, our particular strategy has everything to do with online reviews. So we spend a ton of time every day talking about online reviews. Now, we're doing it via email, and when we're in person or we do Zoom meetings, we're talking about it. We have a goal that every location is acquiring online reviews, and we're letting customers know the importance of online reviews. And customers who love you want to talk about you and tell other people about you. And so you've got to tap into that. You've got to have the courage, the call courage to ask in some cases, which is fine. A customer who tells you, man, you guys have done a great job for me. I just can't say enough about everything you've done for me. Like, if that customer is not begging you indirectly to leave a great review for you online, then I don't know who is. So take that opportunity to ask them, hey, I'd love it if you would, you know, do complete an online review for us. And let them know, word of mouth reputation lives online today. That's where the proof is in the pudding. And so we put tons of, we have over 2,200 reviews and our average rating is 4.8. We've spent a lot of time doing that.
Question 14, Doug, do you see obstacles not as roadblocks, but as opportunities?
I see all of it as part of the process. Whether it's a setback or an obstacle or a roadblock, that's part of the process. And what you learn in overcoming a roadblock is probably just as important, if not more important, than the things you learn that where there is no pushback, there is no difficulty. And then the other thing too that I would emphasize is obstacles and roadblocks are built to go around. So in other words, back to that perseverance value, there is no end. There is no, hey, we're done. We couldn't overcome. We'll figure out a way to persevere and get around any obstacle or roadblock and learn from it as we go.
Here's my takeaway. Get out my mental GPS, my, you know, my visionary GPS and say, how am I or are we going to get around this? I got to get over here, click, reroute me. I'm the one who has to do the rerouting, but mentally it's a reroute.
There's always a way to work it out. There's always a way to find a solution. I mean, that's something that Rick Levitan, my business partner, said since we started. That, and I can tell you in 21 years plus of doing this, I can probably think of maybe one or two instances where we couldn't work something out. I mean, and I'm saying literally out of thousands of different situations, there's always a way to work it out.
Cool. Thank you for that. Question 15, what impact will technology have on your business?
Well, we mentioned it before, ADOS is certainly one of those things that's having big impact on our business. And we continue to try to make sure that we have the latest and greatest in terms of scanners and tools, things like that. And also digital vehicle inspections, DVIs, like, you know, so always taking advantage of the technology and using it to your benefit. And then, you know, trying to understand the coming changes and the different things that are impacting our day-to-day operations.
Thanks for that. A major pivot in your business. Did you ever make one?
We have. I think you know, but maybe not everybody listening knows. But when we started, we were in gas stations, right? We didn't start off in automotive. So we started off in gas stations. And so we had gasoline and C-stores and we had a Subway franchise. We had car washes and we had automotive service. We did pivot because one of the things when we started was we wanted to be gas guys and we were going to do that and run C-stores. We didn't really think about automotive service. The pivot was to automotive service because we love this business. We're passionate about it. And we decided that these other businesses that we were in, and we're still in them in a few cases, that they weren't something that we could be the very best at. But when it came to automotive service, that was a destination business. That was something that we could really dedicate ourselves to in trying to be the very, very best. So that was a pivot that we made pretty early on, but not right, like probably in the first, took us maybe 3, 4, 5 years to get to that point.
Because you were in that business, you must be still an observer of it. Now, I see these mega locations going up. Mm-hmm. I bet you you're happy you didn't, because I'll bet you would have needed more money to keep the environmental, the size, the scope of those businesses up than you do now.
Carm, that's exactly the reason why we were, you know, less less focused on that business. That's exactly why, because we built a brand new location. And this was actually, we opened it 10 years ago, but it was a gas station that we spent in excess of $3 million to build from the ground up. Yeah, I mean, it's a huge investment. And so when you look at, you know, how many automotive service facilities could I potentially build or acquire with that $3 million? Let's just say, even if they were $1 million a piece, I could do three for one. And so that was a big, big part of the equation. And you're also right that when you look at these large format C stores, we have small C stores, you know, 1,000 square feet. These large C stores, those guys, they can do that much better than we could ever do it. And we were able to sort of recognize that and say, we're not going to be a player. We're not going to be the very best at that in gasoline or in C stores or in car washes. But when it comes to automotive service, we believe that we can be the best. We believe we can be the best provider out there. So that's what really made us change that. And that was, you know, that was a big important turning point, as I talked about, in our history.
Thanks for that. Appreciate that. What's your winning formula in developing a strong team?
The winning formula in my mind is to find people that are bought into your culture and who like working together. It sounds very simple, right? And very easy, but it's not. I mean, you've got to find out. People have to understand what we're about, what we're trying to do every day, what our values are, and do we like working together? Do we have fun coming to work every day and doing what we do? Unfortunately, there are cases where people come to work and they're difficult to work with and they don't get along with other people and they can't. And maybe for whatever reason, we didn't see that through the screening process. But as time goes along, if they do fall into that category, that's probably the quickest way for us to be able to identify, like, hey, this just isn't a long-term fit. We want to like the people that we're working with every day. That's a critically important thing.
Thank you. Question 18, Doug. Would your organization crumble if you stepped aside?
Absolutely not. I'm actually very proud of the changes that we've made in the last couple of years. You know, I mentioned David Asquith is our director of operations, and he has functional control of all day-to-day operations. I mean, he's really running the company day-to-day. And that includes in the automotive side of our business and these other sides of our business that I mentioned a second ago, gasoline and C-stores, the ones we have. So he's responsible for all of it. And then now we've begun the process over the last few years of creating more width, more breadth, if you will, in the organization. So we added some overhead that we hadn't up to this point, hadn't taken on. We have a programs and information manager. We added a controller earlier this year, actually in the midst of the pandemic. We had hired somebody and she came on board in April. She asked, do you still want me to come on board with everything that's going on? We said, yeah, you're absolutely. She's put in place all of these different financial systems that we're going to use to measure and track our results internally. So we're super excited about that. We just created another position where we have systems and training manager, a person who's really involved in the evaluation of all of our technicians and their technical training. So we're starting to create some width and some depth. And so for me, I can step away and things would be fine. I mean, everything would be fine.
Do you see yourself as a long-term regional player?
We're going to try to be. Yeah, we're going to try to be. I mean, we're looking for growth opportunities, and that's exciting for everybody in the company. And we constantly share that with everybody. Having growth creates opportunity for everyone, and that's a good thing. So yeah, we're still looking for opportunities to grow. We're going to continue to do that. And our objective is to be the best provider in the Mid-Atlantic region. And so we're going to stay focused on that objective, and we'll be doing that for many, many years.
Excellent. Thank you. Question 19, Doug, is community important? If it is, share your biggest effort.
Community is extremely important, and making sure that people understand that you recognize your obligation, your commitment to give back whenever you can is critically important as well. We have been very blessed. We're very fortunate to have had the success that we've been able to achieve. And so, you know, with great success comes great responsibility. And one of those responsibilities is giving back. And so we do a number of different things. We're very involved in Breaks for Breasts. We've been doing that every October. So we just finished doing that. We've been involved in that organization now for 7 or 8 years.
So much fun. Great people. Love them.
love them to death. And met them at Ratchet and Wrench the first year that conference took place in 2016. But I love it. And I tell this story to our own organization. I tell them every year, this is the truth. So we got involved in Breaks for Breasts. I was recapping for people. This was, 6 or 7 years ago, saying, hey, it's a great thing to be involved in an organization that recognizes this need to give back. We've all been touched by cancer. We know somebody who's been affected by this disease. And I found out, this was actually 5 years ago, I found out a couple months later that my wife had been diagnosed early stage. It was as early and as favorable a diagnosis as you could possibly receive. And she's doing great. I mean, she's great. She's cancer-free and doing great. But I mean, it was interesting to me, like I'm thinking about it, like here I was, we had already been involved in this cause for a couple of years. And I'm saying, hey, let's feel good about the fact that we're giving back in this way. And then it affected me very personally. And so it just made the cause even more meaningful to me personally, and obviously to our organization. So even when we celebrated our 20th anniversary, Carm, last year, we created a fundraiser for the Make-A-Wish Foundation of the Mid-Atlantic. So even when we're sort of recognizing something, an accomplishment of our own, we want to try to use it as a way to give back.
Thank you for that. I have a very parallel and similar story where Anne had, first stage breast cancer 2 years ago. She is in remission. We're fine. And it sounds almost identical to you and I. We're compadres when it comes to that. Leanne Best, Laura Frank, breaksforbreasts.com. If you didn't play this October, please plan on playing next year. Doug's a big player in our industry, an important element of it. They're in it, and they're in it for long term. They see the value of it. Why aren't you doing it?
Yep, you bet. Let's all step up and make a difference.
And of course, community is one of your core goals, so thank you for that. Question 20, I can't believe we got to it. Here we go. And this may not be as juicy as all the other ones. How long ago did you update your website, Doug?
Well, we updated it a year ago when we added a new location, but it is something that's very dynamic. It's constantly being updated. It's actually updated every month. They're making little subtle changes. Anytime we take on, like a lot of the things that we were doing during COVID, for example, as we were changing our marketing methods, contact-free transactions and all these different things. So we're constantly making changes to it. We haven't done a major overhaul in a year or two, and we will be doing that actually very soon. I'm going to be meeting, David has a meeting planned with our website company, which is AutoShop Solutions. I know you had Margaret Palango on not too long ago. We've been using AutoShop Solutions for a number of years now. We love what they do. So we're meeting with Tony Mercury and Jess Maxwell, our account rep, actually on Thursday, and we'll be talking about re-engineering the site and what changes can we bring.
Glad you picked that question, because there's too many out there that, set it and forget it. It seems that the landscape, or the way websites are presented today, continually evolves. You got to look seriously in business. You got to look, you got to have that feel. You got to have those overlays and the graphics and the right colors. To me, I think that's just bare minimum. And of course, the technology behind it, the words and the messages and the pictures that keep people there or keep people confident that the place I just stumbled upon can do a job for me.
The greatest thing about it is that it's not a billboard. It's not something you create and just post. It's a fluid, dynamic, constantly evolving thing that you got to keep on top of and constantly monitor and adjust.
Hey, I had a blast, and I wrote down a bonus question. And after I heard the answer to question number one, and you all got to remember, rock and roll band, lead singer, and all that stuff. So my bonus question to you right now is, you ever go out and do karaoke?
I've thought about it a million times, and like, what would be my song?
Pick a Stone song. What did you sing so well back in the day? I mean, it was just in your key. It was everything, right? What did you say? What was the song you say in every set you got to include blank, right?
For me, yeah. Like I was, I mentioned Jethro Tull, and I had a very similar register to Ian Anderson, the lead singer of Jethro Tull. So for me, that was always kind of a go-to thing. Like I could do that and sound pretty good.
When a band would start playing Locomotive Breath, I would literally just say, anybody, stop, don't talk to me. The music's speaking to me.
Yeah, we used to do Locomotive Breath and Aqualung and The Teacher and all that stuff. Right there, right in my wheelhouse.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Doug Grills, AutoStream, Car Care Center, 6 shop operation and growing out of Maryland. And thank you. This was a blast. This was so much fun, man. Thank you.
It was awesome. I really enjoyed it, Carm. This is such a great format, and I can't wait to see and hear more people on it. So thank you very much.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.